Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, it's another week of the Industrial Talk Podcast. So glad that you are here. Of course, this is where the industrial professional comes to talk. We're all about one thing and one thing only, and that's promoting you, your business, and providing incredible content so that you can be successful as a professional. We're recuperating, right, yeah. Reed, from the beach right now. And, of course, that was a lot of fun and sort of lazy.
It was lazy. It was fun, but, I mean, it was productive. We got some promos done. But I'm definitely recuperating. I am exhausted.
Yeah, I got to tell you, man. The weather was great.
Oh, the weather was beautiful. We had that nice day where it rained, like, the first half, so you could relax and or work out like we did.
Yeah, we don't relax too often. So, all right. Thank you very much once again for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. We are ready to get this show on the road. Thank you. Yeah, it was quite cold in Florida.
No, it felt good though. I mean, like the breeze cooled you down. The sun was nice and hot. I got very sunburned.
Of course you did. Absolutely. Well, we've got a jam-packed show once again. We always do, because we always find those individuals that are quite at the top of their game, and this week's no exception. We've got a gentleman by the name of Keith McCaslin, and he's all about private equity, so I'm really excited about that interview, and so I don't want to waste any more time. So what I'd like to do is just get going.
Tailgate talk number one.
All right. As I look around, I've got a number of events that I think you need to put on your calendar. And the most pressing one, as I look at my computer, it's the Reliability Conference in Las Vegas. And that is scheduled for April 23rd to the 27th. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be broadcasting there and highlighting some of those incredible reliability professionals. So I'm pretty excited about that. And then another one is, sorry about that. This is in Birmingham, UK. This is the Reliability and Asset Management Training Symposium. If you're over there in Europe and you can make that trip, I highly recommend that you do that. That is real important. And then the final one, of course, is July 17th to July 19th, and that is here in New Orleans, Louisiana. Good food.
Great food.
Absolutely.
Good entertainment.
A lot of fun. A must if you are over here, and that is the Asset Conditioning Management Training Symposium. So right off the bat, make sure you attend these events, because Reliability Web does a great job at everything that they do. Phenomenal, phenomenal professionals.
Number two.
All right, this one is something that is near and dear to my heart, and this is industrial law that there's multiple laws, but this one is specific to more value equals more rewards. That's more values equals more rewards. So, you know, think about this. What effect do you want to have on your clients or customers? So, you know.
Yeah, you want to be, you know, knowledgeable of what you're doing. You want to bring value to the table, and you want to ultimately reward them for choosing you.
And don't give up.
Never give up.
Yeah, the Industrial Talk Podcast is all about trying to provide as much value, overflow with value, so that there's hopefully greater rewards in the future, and that you guys will definitely benefit in the future. So reward is a direct proportion to the amount of value that we provide to our marketplace.
So, I love it.
Anyway, so that segues into the Keith McCaslin interview, because I got to tell you, here he's a managing partner with ASG Energy, and they're out of Colorado. And I guarantee you, you go out to their website and you'll find a lot of information and a lot of stuff that they're doing. And they really focus on LED lighting, right? Mm-hmm. But Keith once again is a managing partner with ASG, right? ASG Energy.
Yes, sir.
And he's got a tremendous amount of experience, skills, private equity background, wealth of knowledge. He is an open book, and we were very proud to be able to have him on the show, because Well, geez.
He's a rock star.
He is, man. I got to tell you, man.
There's no better way to describe it.
That's exactly right. And so, nonetheless, we are very fortunate to be able to have Keith on the show. And I'll tell you right now, if you go out to his LinkedIn profile, he responds. He's out there. He wants to connect with you. And if you have any questions whatsoever about private equity.
Yeah, I mean, he was so open. He's like, you know, LinkedIn message me. I mean, he wants to talk to you.
Yeah, so he's a phenomenal man. So without further ado, I'd like you to meet Mr. Keith McCaslin. He is the managing partner at ASG Energy. So enjoy the interview. Hey, Keith, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. I'm so glad that you are here. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Scott. How are you today?
Well, man, it's getting ready to rain. I hear that you've got snow out there and you're getting ready to play golf hopefully tomorrow, huh?
You know, it's Denver. We get snow one day and 60-degree weather the next, so you never know what happens here. It's
God's
crazy
country, my friend. God's country. Well, I know that you're a busy man, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk to you on the Industrial Talk Podcast. Give us a little background on who you are and what makes Keith tick.
You know, what makes Keith tick and what my background is? My background is I started out as a finance guy early in my career, went all the way through, and I'm one of those unusual guys that went through the career up to a CFO and then actually migrated over to be a CEO. So I've got that combination of both finance and operations in my background. So kind of unusual in the leadership space these days.
Yeah, you sent me a doggone background into who Keith is. And like I think I told you, I sort of stopped at halfway through the second paragraph and said, I'm not worthy. I just want to let everybody know out there in the old Industrial Talk Podcast world, this guy is stacked with talent. And I'm not going to go through it just because, well, you don't want to hear me read about it. And you're also a published author, right?
I am. Yeah, I decided I had a lot of IP locked in my head. So about 7 years ago, I said, you know what? It's time to document. So I wrote three books. One is called Due Diligence Secrets. It's basically a book that takes people through whether they're wanting to transition and sell their business or on the acquisition side. It lays it out chapter by chapter on the questions that you should ask the key people in an organization. You know, most due diligence is written basically on the financial side, but this takes a different twist on due diligence and goes after the questions that should be asked.
But you also got that internal controls, and I think there's a business owner's handbook too as well. Huh?
Yeah, there is. The business control book is basically laid out for small businesses, small business owners, and it lays out a how-to set up an internal control system for your business. And the last one is for business owners, and it's laid out basically by a series of articles that I wrote and were published several years ago that lays out for a small business owner different topics that they would find interesting and helps them kind of just guide them through.
Because I know I will forget there, Keith, so bear with me. Can I get those books out on Amazon?
They used to be on Amazon. Now I'm just selling them direct. Amazon was taking too large a cut.
No kidding, man. So note to self. So if when we start to give your contact information out, they got to contact you direct to get those books because I highly recommend it.
Absolutely. Contact me directly. Happy to ship them to them.
Okay, so let's shift gears here. You've got that strong financial background. You definitely are heads and tails above me when it comes to this stuff. You joined ASG Energy with this incredible background. Why did you join ASG Energy?
You know, a good friend of mine, Chris Cohn, was one of the founding partners of ASG Energy. And there were, at the time, last summer, he got a hold of me and called me and said, hey, can you help me get my company ready for sale? And I said, absolutely. Let's get together and chat. So we sat down and talked, and I learned about his business, learned about the LED market. And I said, you don't want to sell. I said, I think I want to be a partner with you because if I look at the metrics of LED lighting, the U.S. market has penetrated somewhere between 10 and 15%. That's a huge market that's untapped that allows growth in this business. So myself and another partner, Mark Parker, went in with Chris and Shane Pulver, and the four of us now are four partners in ASG Energy.
And I've got to ask the question about from a competition point of view. So you do these LEDs, and the value proposition is clear. That's without a doubt. But in Are you getting a lot of competition internationally as a result of this?
You know, our focus really has not been internationally, although we're starting to develop a international channel. Our focus has been domestically, and the true value proposition for us has really been, you know, customer service. There's a lot of companies out there that could go buy LED bulb, have their maintenance team put it in place, but actually we've gotten out of good follow-up business because they've not done a good job. They've screwed up the implementation. So kind of our value proposition is we've got professional project managers that we put in place. So they're on site with the customers guiding the installation crews through the installation, doing a communication wrap-up meeting with the customer every week, as well as a wrap-up meeting at the end of the job and a walkthrough. So it's really that white glove service that differentiates us.
The manufacturing of these LED, where do you get them manufactured?
You know, we buy them from the major manufacturers. You know, it depends on the customer, it depends on the need, depends on the fit. So any of the major LED manufacturers have been our suppliers in the past.
Okay, so let's shift gears here. So you're intrigued with the equity market. You are interested in the focus on taking, for lack of a better term, mom and pop type businesses and either structuring them to sell or structuring them to grow or whatever. How do you see that market progressing? Is it growing or is it contracting? What do you see the market doing?
You know, private equity is looking for deals, looking for companies that want to transition and sell. There's a lot of money on the sidelines resting with private equity today looking for deals. So you've got that. Think about the baby boomer bubble as it moves through. A lot of the baby boomers today may be the founding member of the family that started a business. They need an exit strategy, whether it be a generational transition or an exit by selling to a buyer or to private equity.
And I'm going to have to interrupt real quick. For the layman out there, what are we talking about? What is private equity?
You know, private equity basically are funds that have capital as well as financial and operational people that will come in and buy a business, put it into a portfolio. And typically what they do is what's called a buy, build, and sell. And look at a three-year horizon. So they'll buy a business. They will enhance the management team. They will do add-on acquisitions to build it up. And then they will look to sell it in 3 to 5 years. So that's typical strategy.
So you indicated that this private equity and this world of private equity has been sitting on the sideline. Is what's the reason behind that?
You know, private equity is active. There's a lot of money in the sideline. There's a lot of money that needs to be deployed and put to work. The problem is finding good deals. You know,
what's a typical hurdle that these private equity people or these firms are looking for? What is a typical hurdle?
You know, in terms of hurdle, you mean in payback?
Yeah.
Or do you hurdle in acquisition? You know, they're looking for a good 30% return minimum, you know, on their investment.
So note to self, it's important to be in the private equity world because 30% on your money is pretty doggone good.
Absolutely.
Now, it's always active. They're always looking. And in the industrial world, I mean, there's a lot of small to mid-sized companies. And I would imagine, how does a company say, yesterday I was always engaged, and now today I'm starting to feel like I need to figure out what to do with this. How do you, as a one that's in the private equity world, how do you find those entities that say, I'm ready to go, you know, go to, you know, pasture?
You know, you're out there, you're networking all the time. You're talking to people because you're trying to buy a business that's a private sale. You're trying to find someone who is a willing seller. Because if you get into an auction, and an auction really means is that the business has engaged an investment banker who is out there marketing the business, but trying to get several people in a horse race to really raise the price. That's the last place you want to be involved in an acquisition if you can avoid it, is an auction. Preferentially, you'd like to buy it on a closed sale.
So I'm a small business, and there's small business and mid-sized business that listen to the Industrial Talk podcast. What do you, Keith, recommend that small business do? Like, like the first step?
You know, the first step is too many of them are not prepared for sale. They need to start 2 to 3 years in advance of the actual, when they want to do a transaction and sell the business. They've got to get their financial statements cleaned up. They've got to get them, if they have not been reviewed, get them audited. They've got to get all those books and records cleaned up. They must show that they've got a good 2 to 3 years of growth and that they've got a management team worthy of an investment. You can't just sit there and have a management team that's all ready to retire and want to sell. What's the value proposition for someone coming in to buy it? You need a management team to take it forward.
But let's say I've got, let's say I'm lousy on the old financial side, and I've got this widget that is one heck of a widget. Now, you've got to be able, from a private equity point of view, say, they're just, they don't do a good job, one thing. But this little widget here, man, they're just, it's undervalued, whatever. Now, there's got to be that type of a decision process, right?
There is. Typically, what they'll look at, if there's a company like that has got something unique, a unique value proposition, you know, a unique product, they're going to look to say, hey, does it make sense to something I already have that we can do a bolt-on with it that gives it the back offs, gives it the sales and marketing support that the selling business does not have?
Because that's a lot of work. And are there, are do private equity provide the services of saying, hey, we like your business. Now we're going to help you clean it up, like you indicated. We're going to help you clean it up and get you ready and all that good stuff. Or is that some other third party that says, hey, we're private equity. We think you got a great business, but you're going to have to clean it up and come talk to us in 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, private equity typically will not go in and clean it up. I mean, typically what you need to do is engage a consultant to come in to help get you ready, to kind of coach you through what the process is going to look like, what due diligence is going to look like, what you need to do with your books and records and your audited financials, and get yourself ready. So there's lots of individuals, whether they be, you know, retired executives. For the past few years, up until the point where I acquired ASG Energy, I was doing a lot of that. I was helping clean up businesses. So you find a lot of executives who have been in the business who are doing that themselves. Or if they want to go the route of engaging a broker to help them sell, business brokers will also help them clean the business up and get it ready.
So my recommendation would be to contact you and say, hey, Keith, do you have any recommendations for helping me clean up my business because I'm interested in selling? And you would be the guy that says, yeah, go talk to, you know, this company or this person or whatever. You'd have that skill set.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons the book that I've got, Due Diligence Secrets, helps them too also. Leads them through the questions, gets people prepared.
Okay, we're going to be breaking right now. I'm with Keith McCaslin. That's McCaslan. And he's with ASG Energy, but he is a wealth of knowledge in finance. So thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
All right, you got to mark your calendar for April 23rd through the 27th. And this is a reliability conference that is in Las Vegas, Nevada, brought to you by those wonderful people at reliabilityweb.com. It will have all of the great vendors that are there that are really focused and passionate on reliability, as well as the great content and education. It never ends. Those folks at reliabilityweb.com do a great job. Now, I will be there, just like I was at the IMC 2017 conference in Bonita Springs. So if you missed that, and that was in December, you need to make this one, and it is April. Once again, April 23rd through the 27th. This is in Las Vegas, Nevada. Go out to reliabilityweb.com. Get all the information you can about it. I will be there. I hope to see you, and you have a wonderful day. All right, welcome back to the Industrial Talk Podcast. So glad that you guys are listening out there. Once again, we've got Keith McCaslin, and he's a managing partner with ASG Energy, but he's got a wealth of knowledge in the private equity space. And so, Keith, talking offline, we were chatting, and one of the things that I'm always challenged with is this millennial young group of individuals that are coming up. And they're looking around and they're probing and all that stuff. Now, you're in the private equity. Why would a young person get involved in private equity, and how would they do that?
You know, there's a lot of different routes in for the current careers. Most of the people that get into private equity are coming out of Ivy schools for the big private equity firms like the Blackstone Group out of New York, which is the largest private equity firm in the world. It's interesting that I got involved with private equity and Blackstone Group earlier in my career. I was recruited by Blackstone Group as a CFO for one of their portfolio companies to work with one of their early founding partners, and that was David Stockman. And David, for those of you who recognize the name, was the director of the OMB in President Reagan's cabinet during the time of Reaganomics. I ended up working for David for about 9 years, about 6 years as a CFO and 3 years as a CEO for a Blackstone portfolio company. So there are many different routes where they get recruited from college or get recruited into an executive position in a portfolio company and then kind of work for a private equity firm.
But now Blackstone, that big, gigantic, big. Enormous, fantastic. But there are so many other private equity companies out there that might be a better fit for young people and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. I've worked for several smaller private equity firms over the years also, you know, and for them, you've got to come out of a blue chip college. You've got to have an MBA. Preferably you've done, between your undergrad and your MBA program, you've done some internship in a private equity firm. And then, plan on going to work for long hours if you're working on the private equity firm side.
Is Ole Miss a blue chip college?
For me, it is.
Here in Louisiana, we don't think that is the case there, Keith.
I always thought it was the Harvard of the South.
Definitely have good tailgates. That's for doggone sure.
Absolutely. The Grove, nothing
the
better.
The Grove. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about where you see the future going. Now, I think the economy's expanding. I'm not from a blue chip college like you are. However, do you think where do you see the future going from a private equity point of view?
Private equity is going to continue to grow. Again, like I said, it's that bubble. There's going to be more and more businesses available. And, they're looking for that acquisition. The key is, I look at businesses that have been family owned, and the term that's been used a lot over the years is that there's three generations in a family owned business: thunder, wonder, and blunder. Thunder is the founder who's created the business, who's really got it growing, who passes it to the second generation, which is wonder. They tend to be more of a caretaker of the business. You know, it's not really growing any longer. It's doing what, basically its core business has been. And then the third generation typically is blunder. They've grown up, they've not had to really dig and work hard, and the business tends to start failing during that period of time. So typically I see a lot of businesses between wonder and blunder is the time that they typically are going for sale.
And as an aging, let's just, you got your baby boomers that have invested. They would be the thunder side of this whole thing. And of course, it's sort of transitioned into the wonder, and now we're going into. So I see, correct me if I'm wrong, Keith, but I see that pool growing, that small mom and pop, mid-side mom and pop, the necessity for an exit strategy exists.
Absolutely. I mean, it's huge. Everyone's looking at retirement as you start to move down the spectrum. What do you do with the business? It's been your baby. You've grown it, but you don't want to give it away, but you want to find the right transition, the right people. A lot of times, too, you're trying to find the buyer who will transition so you can retire, but you want to continue the culture that you started. A lot of the businesses have a unique culture to them. They want to see it continue.
Okay, so here's what I would say. So you go on in, you're the owner, you want to go the private equity route. How about that third generation? Are they going to get their nose bent out of shape, and do you have to deal with that type of emotion?
It's interesting. One of the firms that I worked with from 2010 through 2012, when I came in for the private equity firm, I had to exit all three generations out of the business. I had to exit the founder. The son of the founder had been the president, and the grandson of the founder, and then change the culture. That is a challenge when you go into a business to make a significant culture change by getting rid of all three generations when the business really had identified themselves as a family-owned business. But however, it was private equity owned, and we needed to grow.
Imagine that made for some fun conversation, I would imagine.
That makes for interesting life.
Yeah, strong shoulders there, my friend. Strong shoulders. I can only imagine, my goodness. So let's talk a little bit about ASG. Now, you're involved with ASG. You've been involved since really just December, right?
Just December, yeah. I'm new in it. I'm still learning.
And tell me why it was so attractive to you being the private equity guy.
You know, what was very attractive to me was it's a combination of things. One is it's an untapped market. You know, it's got a lot of growth potential the next several years. So you're looking for, you know, a market that has, you know, double digit growth going to the future. And if you look at the Department of Energy projections for LED lighting just in the U.S. without tapping the international markets, you know, it's showing significant growth going forward over the next 5 to 10 years. That was attractive. Number two, it gets back to kind of like culture. You got to like the people you're working with. You know, the partners all get along well. We all have the same views. We're all Christian guys, and we got together, and it was just a good mix. So that chemistry is very, very important. So those are the kind of the combinations.
Okay, so you're in the driver's seat right there. You've got you're a strategy guy. What's your strategy for ASG Energy? Where do you see it going? And you're not. Are they thinking about flipping and selling, or what is your strategy for ASG?
I'm the partner that's always thinking of flipping and selling.
I got 20 bucks. I'll buy.
Yeah. Right now the key is we've got several big Fortune 500 customers, even a Fortune 7 customer. The goal right now is to expand the customer base. We're deep with several big customers. And go broader. We need to have a broader base. I'm also starting to work on an international channel for us too. So the key for us really is to grow the sales, grow the channels of revenue that we generate from. And this is really what we look at as called LED1. I mean, we're going in, the value proposition in LED1 really is the cost savings. You know, we work with these different customers, we survey their site. We talk to the local utilities. They give us 12 months of electric bills, and we calculate an ROI for them that's typically under 3 years for a facility.
So your payback's under 3 years?
Absolutely, under 3 years. Some will go over, but typically it's around a 3-year payback for them, which is really nice because that's almost cash on cash.
I was just going to say that's bottom line value.
Yeah. Notwithstanding the changes in the recent tax law, we can get some nice advantages.
Yeah, I saw that. And for the listeners out there, he's provided a white paper that I think would be very helpful to all companies out there that are looking for ways of being able to be more efficient, bottom line value. I think this is a great strategy for you as a company. Now, when you start talking about international, are you looking in Europe, Asia? Where's your focus from an international? And Canada's not international.
No. I'm looking more. I'm talking to contacts that I have that are in Europe, the Middle East, and in Africa. So yeah. That's my focus right now. And these are contacts I've had over the years from other businesses I've run. So we're looking at focusing those marketplaces.
That's good. And LED as a technology, has it seen its improvement, or is it from a technology point of view growing and improving and for lack of a better term, becoming better?
You know, it's evolving is probably a better term to use, that the technology continues to get better, but businesses, and I'm talking large businesses, are looking at LED as a next generation also. The next generation of LED is, if you think about the LED lights, they're basically a small CPU up there in the lights. The talk is going from Wi-Fi to Li-Fi.
Whoa. Wi-Fi, got that. I understand that technology. Say it again.
Li-Fi? Lighting.
Oh, no kidding.
L-I-F-I, lighting.
What does that mean? Next generation is Li-Fi. Is this Li-Fi, the one that I've got on a strip light here around my TV?
No, I don't think that droopy light is it.
But, hey. that's top-notch stuff right there.
No, Li-Fi is really going to replace your routers, all of your internet transitions and traffic and data gathering will go through the lights at some point in the future.
No way.
Absolutely.
So give me a time frame on life. Wow. Head explode. Tell me a time frame on that.
It's not that far away. Within the next 2 to 3 years, you're going to start seeing lighting change and become a mechanism for data capture. Let's say as an example, too, you put lighting in a hospital that's LED2 compatible, that is tying into software that's tying in. So let's say you've got a patient that has a wristband like today, but you have the chip in there. The lighting throughout the hospital can track that patient as they move around, because if they can't find a patient, let's say, and that does happen, well, they can now find them because you're tracking them through the lights. That's one example.
The robots are going to run the world, Keith.
Yeah. Well, here's a better example. How about for the problems that we have in our society today with the school shootings? You change and you put smart lights in the schools that can change color from light to red to green, as well as recognize a gunshot, and that area could turn to red lights and the other areas turn to green, so the students would know where to go to escape an active shooter scenario.
That is so cool. My gosh, Keith, you blew my mind. Doggone it. We've got another heartbreak. This is Keith. And he knows a lot about the future. And I really appreciate it, Keith. Thank you very much. We're going to be right back, but hold on. Thank you for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. We'll be right back. Hey, once again, this is Scott McKenzie with Industrial Talk. If you like what you're listening to, please feel free to sign up for the free podcast as well as the blogs. I'll try to keep it all relevant to your business, and hopefully be able to provide some insight into what we do at Industrial Talk and what you do as a professional. Hope to see you soon. Thank you. All right, welcome back to the Industrial Talk Podcast. Once again, I'm with Keith here, and we're talking about the future with LED. And Keith, we were talking offline. I'm a business, right? And I'm thinking, I'm still in the thunder phase, and I want to be able to improve my bottom line. Why is LED so important?
You know, LED is important, and why private equity really likes it. If you think about an LED installation for your facility, let's say you have to spend $500,000 in lighting. Let's say you got a big facility. That is going to be capital you spend. It comes as cash, but you spend that as cash, and it does not affect your bottom line because you're looking at EBITDA when you go to sell. Next point is you're generating cost savings because you've eliminated maintenance. Most of the bulbs and fixtures, and lights come with a 10-year warranty today. Doesn't mean they're going to wear out in 10 years. It's like your car with a 3-year warranty. It doesn't stop working in 3 years, but a 10-year warranty. So now you've saved on your maintenance cost. Next thing is you've reduced your utility bill. So typically, I've got a business case where, a business looked at spending $500,000. They had a savings on their LED lighting of about $110,000 plus another $10,000 in maintenance savings. When you do the payback, their payback is under 3 years, and the $10,000 in maintenance savings, the $110,000 of utility savings, the $120,000 that goes to your bottom line, that goes right to EBITDA. And you save that for 12 months, and let's say you want to sell at a 7 multiple, at $120,000, that just added $840,000 of value to you when you go to sell your business.
You had me at hello. Doggone it. I mean, that's amazing. Now, okay, I got to ask the strategic question again. Why not acquire additional business to expand your capacity, your capability, or your reach?
You know, we're looking at a lot of different things. I just prefer not to talk about some of the strategy we're doing right now to grow our business and reach other than the current channels.
I had to ask because
it's a great question.
Well, of course, because I'm thinking about getting into it just because of you. Don't worry about it. No, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I'm an old private equity guy. I keep my, I got to keep the lips sealed.
Awesome. Well, I got to tell you, man, you've been absolutely fantastic, Keith. We're going to be wrapping this up. How do people get a hold of you? Because I got to tell you out there, If you just, Keith, are you open to just say hello to people?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm telling you, I'm going to be able to provide contact information for Keith. I think if you have any interest in proceeding forward to whatever next phase you want, I'm sure Keith has the answer. I don't have the answer. I just have the good looks. And so, Keith, how do they get a hold of you?
You know, you can get a hold of me on LinkedIn. I'm out there on LinkedIn. You can follow me on my blog. You can follow me on my Twitter. I think that...
You got a blog where?
I've got a blog on WordPress. KeithMcCaslin.wordpress.com.
Got it.
And Twitter is just at Keith McCaslin. A little difficult.
And you're pretty active on those platforms?
You know, relatively. I've gotten more active again as I've gotten more involved with ASG. It kind of took a hiatus for a few years.
Right.
And I'm getting more active again.
Well, listen up out there. You got to contact Keith. He knows what's going on. He has truly blown my mind this interview. I'm Keith, I'm honored. I mean, we just sort of threw this one together in a sense that you were introduced to me, I think a couple of weeks ago,
yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Not that. And now you're my best friend. And can I borrow money? Just kidding. What the heck, man?
Yeah, I know. I got to talk to the boss, which is also known as my wife.
Very good. And now your wife, we're going to have her on the Industrial Talk podcast too as well, because she is doing some books.
She's doing some books, and she's that rare animal who has a Six Sigma black belt in health.
Amazing. You guys are amazing. Hey, thank you very much for being a part of the Industrial Talk podcast, Keith. And thank you all for joining the Industrial Podcast. We'll be right back on the other side.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
All right, that was Keith McCaslin. He is the managing partner at ASG Energy. That was an incredible interview.
It was. He's awesome.
I got to tell you, man, I could talk to that guy for hours and hours and hours. It's quite a gentleman, too.
And he would talk back to you for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he is an open book. So thank you very much, Keith, for joining the Industrial Talk podcast. And as well as, we've got a little white paper that I want you to note. Keith has provided a white paper that is specific to LED lighting, and it's just the value of LED lighting to a company's bottom line. Now, you can get a copy of that free of charge, no big deal. What I'm going to ask, though, is that you go out to my website at industrialtalkpodcast.com. That's industrialtalkpodcast.com, and you're just going to have to drive on over to get in touch and just... I'm not going to put up a pop-up or anything like that. If you want that white paper, that private equity white paper, go on out to get in touch. And that is industrialtalk.com. Contact, and just let me know. So we're wrapping it up right now. A lot to say, a lot to do. Have a wonderful week. Be safe, and thank you once again. It's because of you guys that we produce this show. So. Thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk podcast. Have a great week.